C3. Number 2B.
So, if we want to pray aright, we have to consider and analyze those four factors and make it quite clear to consciousness that in our prayer, those four factors are actually of the same nature, of God-like nature. So let's consider it one by one. Let's take the petition. The petition we call usually God and God's perfection. So in our prayer we have the perfect God. And the chapter on prayer really shows right at the beginning the perfection of God. That there we see what is the nature of God's perfection, that mind knows already all, that spirit possesses already all substance, that soul is unchangeable, that principle is harmonious being, that life is an open fount that is pouring forth already more than what we accept, that truth is already doing the immutable right, and in love, that love has already done all, that his work is done. Now that's the starting point from which we don't want to deviate anymore. That's the petition. Who is already perfect? Who cannot be less than perfect? Who cannot do less or be less than perfect? So there is already that wonderful completion. That perfection is already expressed, so there is never any unmanifested good. Good is always manifested. The petition, God, is a God who is always manifest, because he has an idea. That's the infinite idea. He said, my idea is good. That perfection, which is always express, does not need to be changed, cannot change. So prayer cannot change the signs of being. Or do we expect to change perfection, she asked? Prayer cannot change the unalterable truth. Can you hear the perfection of the petitioned? And that where is that petition? Is he up in heaven? Or where is he? Jesus' prayer, she says, were deep and conscientious protest of truth, comma dash, of man's likeness to God. And of man's unity with truth and love. So that petitioned, which we were just picturing in its perfection, which cannot do less nor more than to be perfect, who is already expressing all the good there is, where there is no unexpressed good, where is that? In Jesus' prayer it was with man. Man's unity with God. So that petition is not somewhere, someone with us, within us. We pray to God within us. We pray to the perfection within us. And we, as we know the 17 on the sound, we just can, in a wonderful way, stand in awe of the perfection within. We go to the second. the petitioner. Who is the petitioner? Is it a sinner? Or is he a saint who can pray? Neither a sinner nor a saint can pray aright, because a mortal, either good or bad, has nothing to do in the oneness of being. He is not of the same nature as the oneness of being. So it is never a person that does pray or can pray. Never. So what is it that prays, if it isn't a person? Therefore, we can never ask who is the petitioner, because the who cannot pray. We must ask, what is the petitioner? Just as Mrs. Eddy impersonalizes the term man in the definition of man, where she says, man is that which has no separate mind from God, has no separate quality from God, that which. It is not he who. You see? We would define man as a he who. But it is a that which. And so the petitioner is no more a he who, but a that which. What is that which can pray? Well, I think Paul gives some wonderful answers for that. He says, for we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercessions for us. See, he exchanges the he who to the Spirit itself. He prays. He makes intercessions for us. Think of it. That God within me prays. That the Spirit of God within me prays, not me. That's why I can be a saint or a sinner. I have the same access to God. The same direct access to God. The moment I see the scientific prayer, because it is not the good man, nor the bad man that prays, it's the Spirit of God within me that prays. Or he says in Corinthians, the things of God knoweth no man, but the Spirit of God. It's again the Spirit of God within us that can know God. No other thing within us can know God but God himself, or we would have a duality. So we can see that praying to God is praying always from perfection and through perfection. Perfection is only gained by perfection. So you see, that which prays in me must be perfection, or it doesn't pray. It's just begging. Only perfection in me can pray to perfection. Without fitness for holiness, she says, we cannot receive holiness. So holiness receives holiness. Holiness prays to holiness. Holiness receives holiness. It's always within the same realm of being. There is no duality there. Just think of Malachi who expressed that and said, well, if you bring perfection into your storehouse instead of diseased lands and rotten offerings and so on, I don't know the English expression all about it where he said, but bring ye all that the tithes, thank you, the tithes in the storehouse. And then he says, then you can prove me. You can prove me. Now there is, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing that there shall be no, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Can you see? By bringing perfection and wholeness to perfection, perfection comes back as perfection. It's never going out from lack to perfection and of perfection to throw back perfection. It's going out from perfection. Fitness for holiness. All right. We go to the third point, to the means of prayer. What is that which enables that which prays in us to reach, to make one with the petition? What are the means of prayer? Mrs. Eddy says the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith, that all things are possible to God, comma, dash. A spiritual understanding. An unselfish love. Not an unselfish love. An unselfish love. So that which is the means by which the petitioner reaches the petition is that spiritual understanding and unself-love. What is that spiritual understanding? It's not the understanding which we have about God. That's duality. It's something about. It is that understanding where I see that I have no other mind but the divine mind. That I have no other spirit but the divine spirit. That I have no other soul but the divine soul, no other principle, no other life, no other truth, no other love, but the divine principle, the divine life, divine truth, divine love. When I see that, that I can only have with an unself love. I can only have that when my love is unself. Unself without a self, without a self of the petitioner, nor a limited self of the petition. When there is only the divine ego. So, that unself love is not a love of just mere unselfishness, but a love which does not know any human personal self, where therefore no person enters into the prayer, into the purpose of prayer, into the aim of prayer, where there is just that one ego, that one self, which is love, which loves not one to the other, but which is love as such. Just love as such. I think you have another expression, love in its own right. That I have never heard that except here, so I don't know if that is the right term. Well, it doesn't matter. For its own sake. No, not quite that. Yes, doesn't matter. But in this chapter on prayer, therefore, you have so often that sense of that unself, that the ego is absent from the body and present with truth and love. That the only self is the divine self, the capitalized self, the ego, the one self. So that the means of prayer must be of the same nature as God himself, as the ego itself. Therefore, all what we can do is to lay aside self. And more I begin to feel, one sometimes pronounces one's own view, perhaps one shouldn't, but there is development in everything. But I feel this, that in this very first sentence of the textbook, Mrs. Ebbitt gives the necessary keystone by which we can understand science and health as a science, namely, unself. Until we are studying, or I must put the grammar around, as long as we are still studying that textbook, even diligently, even lovingly, even with consecration, but have not right before our eye that there is no self in being, there is no ego in being, that the whole textbook cannot be opened and understood as a science. It will be understood as the religion of Christian Science, because it will be something that will try to save the human ego, that goes out within personal ego, which wants to be saved. Now, Christian Science is at the point of perfection. It starts at the point of perfection. It is never behind the point of perfection, nor does it advance to the point of perfection. But being, if we want to see the Christian Science textbook from the oneness of being, and therefore from the point of view of science, the ego has to go out. Or it will be a religion. That's why the Christian Science textbook is read by millions of people. It's read and studied as a religion, not as a science. But when we get the key tone right in the first sentence, where also Mrs. Eddy always says, get Mrs. Eddy out of the way, get Mary out of the way. See, all that sense of put Mary out of the way, I think she said. See? It's saying to us, if you study that textbook, first put Max out of the way. That's the very first thing you have to do. That's why obstetrics is so important, because no human conception can enter in. So study the textbook. Before you study it, put the Max in the corner. Put yourself right out of the way and know he has no place in being. It's just a, oh, I nearly said a dirty belief. And then, when we have left the universe of people, then we are at least prepared to be receptive. I come to the fourth point. The fourth point is what I may say the result of prayer, or the effect of prayer, or the reward of prayer, because, you know, we usually pray because we want something, because we are in need of something. So we must be clear that also this point is pure, that it hasn't any facet in it which is not of the one nature of being, or we have duality. And we cannot expect that prayer will be efficient. That need, therefore, must be God-like. The need to be met is a need that is God-like. Therefore, we can never pray for anything which is God-unlike, which is for material things, for personal things, for personal happenings, for something limited, for something egotistic, I think. Doesn't matter. Well, in other words, it's a question of silencing completely everything which is not of the divine nature. That in prayer, how much we are in trouble, how much we are in need of something human, we think. It is our first thing to put that right out of our consciousness because it has no place in the oneness of being. What then has place in the oneness of being? What then is our true need? If there is, if we feel a personal material need, and that is not true, well, there must be a truth about that need. And the only truth about that need is just what Mrs. Eddy put right at the beginning of the chapter in the scriptural notes and said, "Your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask him." He knows the need. We are not going to tell him what we need. We are going to tell him what we need. We have a duality. But if we can put that right out of the way and say, "Now, here I am. What's going on in being?" In being, it's going on that the Father knows his own idea. That God has his idea. And that he knows his idea, he knows our need. Before we asked him, long before we were in trouble, he knew it. What does the Father know what our need is? He knows that our need is to discover our divinity. That is certainly our need, and that is in the same nature of being. So our prayer is to put away all selfish concepts, material concepts of need, and see that the divine need is to discover our divinity. That the need we have is to know us as God knows us. That our need is that God gives us grace and that we have growth in grace. The need is that we are absent from the body and present with God. Our need certainly is to let us be used by God. And as life, our need is that we are the experience of God. Not that we are going to have an experience, but man's need is that he is God in experience. That we are the experience of God himself. And as truth, perhaps we see that what our need is that we are the very working of truth itself. And I think as love, I like to think in love, what is my need? My need is to be the divine adventure of love, to be all in all. That's what I need. A big need. A divine need. To be the divine adventure of love. To be all in all. That the idea of allness is manifested. So you see, in prayer, in the fourth point, we are not going to put forth our own concept of what we desire. But as Mrs. Eddy says, to leave our real desires to be rewarded by God. To leave the real desires, not the unreal desires, and to be rewarded by God, because only the real desires can be rewarded by God. God gives you his spiritual idea, and in turn they give you daily supplies. Or like Job said so nicely, said, "For he performeth the thing that is appointed for me." I'm not going to appoint anything for me. I'm not going to appoint what my future is going to be and pray about it. Not at all. That's metaphysics. That's not science. In science, we let God appoint that which is right for me and let God perform it for me. Or, as in Psalms, it is said, "The Lord will perfect that which concerneth me." I have no concern anymore, a self-concern anymore about me. The only concern I have is that the Lord is going to perfect that which he is concerned about me. And he certainly is concerned about his idea, because he's one with his idea. Or as Jesus said, the Father dwelleth, that dwelleth in me. He doeth the work. I'm not going to go and do the work. My prayer is that I'm so open, that I'm so unself, that I'm so receptive, that I make so infinite room that finally God has a chance to come in and stay with me and abide with me and perfect what he has in view for me. Then everything is of the same nature. And that is really, when you see, the prayer that covers every human need. See, we take sometimes this wording, perhaps I do it a wrong way, but for a long time I took it and said, well, that's wonderful, you know. We have so many human needs, and they should be met. And love is so good that love will care for all those human needs. And now I think differently. Now I think, oh, if I see that prayer of oneness right, then all my human needs are covered, are met. That's all finished, because then the Father knows what I need. And when that which God has appointed me to be is fulfilled through God's way, that certainly does away with all my human needs. That certainly covers everything. And so, to finish, I think we could see that really there is not a human who prays for something material, human, personal. But the most universal or encompassing prayer is that I just accept within me God's perfection, the unity which exists between God and man, God dwelling in me, in its perfection, and dwelling in all and everything. So I could perhaps say, well, what is prayer? What is it when I pray? And then I would say, I can't pray. But it prays in me. It prays in us. When we really accept that God, that mind, say, manifests itself as the all mind in all and in everything. It prays in me. It, that God who is in me, prays in me, the Spirit of God prays in me. It prays in me when I accept and I open my thought to the fact that Spirit in me unfolds everything in an ordered way. No, I can go further and leave out at me and see that is prayer when I accept that Spirit unfolds orderly in all and in everything. It prays in me when I accept that soul blesses and blesses all and everything, every situation. It prays in me when I accept in me the fact that principle just works in every detail as an infinite calculus in everything and in everyone. It prays in me, and I accept the fact of life, that life brings out newness of life in all and in everything, always, uninterruptedly. It just prays in me when I listen and sit still and just know and hear how truth says, I am. Truth says, I am. I demonstrate myself unrestrictedly as the truth about all and about everything. when I sit still and listen, hear how love says, I am, and then praising me because that I am says, I am the fulfillment of everything and of everyone.